The Athletic.
Hello and welcome back to 1874 on The Athletic, a podcast all about Aston Villa Football Club. I'm Dan Bardell, joined by Greg Evans, The Athletic's Aston Villa reporter. And just before we start, you can subscribe to The Athletic UK right now for a special price of £3.99 a month for 6 months. That's 40% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts, including this one. So go to theathletic.com/VillaPod to take advantage of this special 40% discount. That's theathletic.com/VillaPod. Now, I've had a few messages about the Stephen Moore podcast. Obviously, a lot of you will have read Greg's written piece. Really, really interesting read. But we did do a podcast with him as well. The reason that hasn't been out yet is that we're saving it for the close season to give you guys something to sink your teeth into. So here's a little teaser. That podcast will be with you at the end of May, beginning of June.
I didn't really have someone who'd been there and done it around me who could say, you should be doing this, you need to be working, this is just the start. I just thought it's only going to get better from here.
Yeah.
And it gets harder. When you get there, it's easy to get there. Everyone can have one go, can't they? But to stay there, you've got to work even harder. I didn't grasp that at all. So I played some like 26 games that year for Villa and I wasn't on at all. I was thinking, what's going on here? Like, so I've got there, now I'm not. I'd start again. We end up doing a deal that I go to, again, I signed for QPR, not knowing enough about it. I haven't even gone and met the manager. No one can ever take that away. I scored on my debut, youngest Premier League player to score for Villa. No one can ever take that away from me.
Morning, Greg. We'll start with what I imagine was a very tough day for you yesterday. Some really harrowing stuff from the trial for the murder of former Villa striker Dalian Atkinson.
Yeah, Dan, good morning. Villa have lost a few heart-end heroes in recent years, haven't they? So, yeah, it was a very sad case to cover. I mean, it was 5 years ago now that Dalian was killed outside of his father's home in Telford. And what we heard yesterday in court was just pretty much what happened on that day. Dalian's behaviour was erratic. It was strange. You know, he wasn't a well person at the time as well. He had heart disease and kidney problems. So police were called to his father's home because of a disturbance. And when they got there, he was tasered 3 times, the third one lasting for 33 seconds, which, you know, as you would have read the reports, is 6 times longer than the required length. The court also heard that PC Benjamin Monk of West Mercia Police, the officer who deployed the taser, also kicked Dalian in the head with such force that it left his boot imprints in his forehead. He denies the murder and manslaughter, and another officer, Mary Betley Smith, also denies assault, and you know, the case continues.
Yeah, obviously we can't go into too much detail, but is this something that you're going to continue to cover for The Athletic? And do you know how long it's going to go on for as well?
I'm expecting it to be quite a long case, Dan. I mean, somewhere around 6 to 8 weeks. So, I'll be in court as and when required, and I'll continue to provide updates as it continues.
Good stuff. Well, not good stuff at all, but yeah, you catch my drift. And what else have you been working on, Greg?
Yes, I had a few days off, actually, over the weekend. I missed it.
Did say you were covered.
yeah, missed the Everton game, watched it on TV. I thought Villa were great, which we'll get onto shortly. And obviously adhered to the social media boycott as well for 3 or 4 days. Hopefully, you know, you did the same, didn't you, Dan? Hopefully,
yeah.
That, you know, our little part all made a part of a bigger impact. So, a lot of people got involved with that. Yeah, got an exciting interview coming up at the end of the week, which will go live before the Man United game. With a current player at Villa, so that's one to look out for, and then some exciting stuff leading up to the Euros.
You've kept that quiet because I don't know a single thing about the current player that you're interviewing, so you've been keeping that under your hat and your time off.
I like to keep some things away from you, Dan. You don't know everything as much as you think you do.
Nice positive start to the podcast there, giving me a bit of unwarranted abuse, Greg. So you weren't at Everton on Saturday, but you watched it on TV like me, and in my opinion, I think it was Villa's best away display of the season.
I mean, I still think the Arsenal away result was probably the best. I thought that was the most complete performance of the season. But I think given where Villa were in recent weeks and how they'd underperformed and almost become a bit dull and boring, hadn't they, to watch, I think that this Everton performance and the result came at the real right time. I spoke to somebody at the club before the last home game, and you know, he said, look, if we can get up to the sort of the 50-point bracket and then go and beat one of the typical sort of top six, seven sides along the way, and obviously Villa have got a lot of those remaining, then it will be seen as a very good season. And it's heading towards that way now, isn't it? That Everton result was a really good, a step forward, I think. And it just showed that Villa can play without Jack after all.
Yeah, that was the big thing, wasn't it? I mean, it's a great result. Take that away, but the performance was really, really strong as well. You know, it wasn't just that we had two chances and we scored two goals. I thought some of the football that we played was really fluid and we looked really dangerous going forward. And in the first half, actually could have had a few more, really.
Yeah, I was watching on and I thought, I hope Villa don't rue their missed chances, because they had quite a few, didn't they? And they certainly looked like the more aggressive side. And I thought, yeah, I was very pleased with them, and they obviously got the win in the end.
Yeah, El Ghazi now, his productivity this season has been incredible, especially when you think about he didn't get anywhere near the team until the middle of December. So that's 8 goals in 12 starts now. He scored winners against Wolves, against West Brom, against Everton, and he got us a point with a goal against Chelsea as well. Really nice goal, took it really well. He can be up and down, El Ghazi, but those numbers, you can't really argue with them, can you?
No, those numbers are great, actually. And I think he'll probably be frustrated that he hasn't played or certainly started as many games as he would have liked. There was a period, wasn't there, around, you know, the turn of the year where he was in great form and then kind of lost his momentum because he lost his place, didn't he? And I felt maybe it was the wrong decision to pull him out at a time where, you know, he was really in good form. But 2 goals in the last 2 games, as you say. What is it, 8 goals now?
8 goals in 12 starts.
That's really impressive, isn't it? I suppose his goals to games ratio must be quite high up there. And yeah, it's a case of now, do Villa stick or twist with him for me? I think we had almost this scenario, didn't we, last season with Trezeguet when he had a pretty poor season, you know, on the whole, but then really came into his own towards the end and scored some important goals. I feel like El Ghazi has actually produced more than Trezeguet has this season, but we are in the similar position, aren't we, where we're thinking, do Villa still need to upgrade on an El Ghazi and possibly even Traore and go even bigger in the wide positions next year? Or can those players actually still do it for them? I think that given those goals, you can't look beyond El Ghazi, despite the fact that he can be frustrating and go through games where he doesn't really do anything. But those goals speak for themselves, don't they?
It's one of those games where you feel like everyone's been off form at the same time whilst Jack's been out. But actually watching us, everyone seemed to come back to form at exactly the same time, which was really strange, because I thought Traore looked way more dangerous on the other flank than he has done for weeks. I mean, he left one of their players on the floor with an unbelievable bit of skill in the first half, didn't he? And he made an impact as well. Can you give me any reasoning at all why suddenly it looked like so much better for Villa?
Yeah, no, you are right. I mean, three or four of them really, really turned it on, didn't they? I think Traore must have watched Matias Pereira the week before and thought, you know, if I don't turn up, then this guy might be taking my place next season. But, you know, he certainly put in one of his better performances. I'd started to become a little bit frustrated with Traore, actually. I think when he, again, around that sort of New Year period when Villa were flying, he was really on top of his game, but he'd become a bit frustrating for me. And I know he's a maverick type player who goes hot and cold, but and wingers, as we've, you know, discussed on these podcasts for a couple of years now, typically do blow hot and cold, don't they? And they're the ones that are always going to try and find that consistency to prove how good they are. But I can't give you a reason why he turned it on, no. But it was certainly pleasing to see. And obviously Ross Barkley as well. I think he's been Villa's best player for the last 2 games.
Yeah, I thought he was arguably, again, man of the match against Everton. I mean, obviously, it would have been really nice for him to return to Merseyside and pick up the 3 points. But he suddenly looks fitter and stronger, and he's doing the things that we've wanted to see him do for the last month to 6 weeks, where we just haven't really got anything out of him at all. Again, can you find any reason why he's suddenly back to his best?
Well, I think, look, it was a season for Barkley that he really had to take advantage of, and he started well. He had a long period in the middle where it was poor, obviously coming on the back of off the back of the injury that kept him out for a while. Then he just couldn't really find any rhythm. You know, he was trying to play his way back into fitness, but didn't quite get there. Then when he lost his place, he was coming off the bench and not really getting enough minutes to provide any consistency. And you could clearly see that his confidence was shot to bits. You know, every time he misplaced a pass, it was he didn't really know what to do from there on in, and he was afraid to take on players, those sort of long driving runs that we've been so used to seeing for Chelsea when he was playing well, and for Everton, obviously, started to disappear. He was passing the ball backwards and sidewards too often, which just isn't Ross Barkley's game. And I just feel like the Albion game, where he won an early penalty, gave him a bit of confidence and gave him the belief to say, look, you know, I am a very good player. I can do this. I believe in myself again. Let's be a little bit more expansive, which he was in the Albion game. Let's try things in a more creative way rather than being safe. And he's taken it on from there. And Everton, obviously, look, he would have gone back to Goodison with a point to prove. You could clearly see he wanted a goal and was so unlucky not to get one with the effort that hit the post. But he's in a good moment right now, and I feel that's only going to be good for Villa.
Yeah, it's important for him himself, I think, to end the season well. He doesn't want his career to disappear. Does a good end to the season for Ross Barkley, does that change things with a permanent move to Villa, maybe, do you think?
It's hard, isn't it? I mean, if he has, five blockbuster performances, for the remaining games, then you're looking at seven back-to-back performances. And then if you start analysing the season, he's almost had as many good games as bad games, which for me, if you're spending £35-40 million, which is what he's going to be worth, then it's hard to justify that when he's very...
Do you think he is worth that still? Do you think that's what they'd want still?
You know, I think that's what Chelsea are going to be looking at. I think that's what, when he came, that was the value he was at. And, you know, there might be a club out there that could get potentially a cut price deal, and then they get the best out of Ross Barkley, and then they're getting good value for money. I think this is probably not a possibility for next season, but if Villa could get another loan deal for him, if they could get a season-long loan, which, again, you know, I admit I don't think it'd be likely, but if they could, I think it'd be worth going for it again, because it takes off the pressure of having to invest a significant amount of money in him. And Dean Smith will know that he can turn it on in certain games. And if he can get an improvement out of him next season, then it'd be good. But I don't see Villa paying, you know, anywhere near the amount of money for Ross Barkley that was quoted when he first came on loan.
No, I can't see any way in which Chelsea think they can get that either. The inconsistencies have probably put paid to that, but Chelsea want to recoup some money because I think they spent a fair amount on him when they got him in the first place. It'd be an interesting one and one to keep an eye on. But for him, as I say, I think to end the season well would be a big thing for him. And if Villa have a Ross Barkley ending the season well, that's a big thing for Villa, because he's very different to some of the midfielders that we do have.
Yeah, look, I think it's widely accepted at Villa that the two real flair players in that team are Ross Barkley and Jack Grealish. And I think if you can get those two going at the same time, then they can be a really exciting team. The issue that Villa have had is that Grealish has obviously missed a third of the season now, or whatever it is. And Barkley has been out of sorts for longer than half the season. So it's difficult, but clearly, you know, I've been saying this all season because I liked Ross Barkley as a player previous to Villa. And when he came, I was very excited and to see what he could do. So I still believe he's got that in him. And the last two games were a good sign. So, you know, he's got some tough games coming up now, Man United and Chelsea and Tottenham. Games that are going to be difficult, but obviously can't play again. They've still got Chelsea, haven't they? My thinking things.
Yeah, Leicester.
Yeah, obviously last home game. Play, you know, he can't play in that, so he's got four games left to really show what he's capable of. But I think he's got to the stage where he realises that he just has to perform, because if he doesn't, then he's going to struggle to find a club that want him next year.
Yeah, I mean, he's one that's taken an absolute torrent of abuse on social media, and on the weekend there's a social media blackout and people will be writing nice things about him. They're not happening, are they? But yeah, hopefully he ends the season well, because I think in the games against the big teams, he can be a real game changer. If he plays really well against Man U on Sunday, Villa have got a chance, and you know, we'll come on to the Man U game, but that's a game I really want us to do something in on Sunday. You touched on it at the start of the podcast, but it was big to win a game without Jack and to play well, wasn't it? Because I think the other games perhaps Villa have won since he's been out, we haven't played great, but to play well without him was a big thing.
Yeah, I think the Leeds game that obviously Villa won without Jack was I think it was a good performance, but they weren't sort of scintillating, were they? They weren't great to watch. But, you know, a win's a win. So, and given the way that Leeds beat Villa at the start of the season, that was good to get that win. I think the Fulham game, Villa were quite lucky. I think they were poor, weren't they, for a long period of that game.
And when great 15 minutes though, Greg.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, not going to take that away from them, and credit to their attitude and their desire to turn around a going behind and then getting the win. But you're right, you know, the Everton game was the real proper performance, and I think the back end of the West Brom game and the entirety of the Everton game showed some really good signs for Villa, and I think if they can take that into the Man United game, they've got a chance, and then, you know, let's just hope they can finish with a flourish.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Move on to that Man U game. I just wanted to talk about Ollie Watkins. Another goal for him. You know, I mean, he sniffed it out for himself, didn't he? I mean, Mason Holgate must be having nightmares about coming up against Villa. He always seems to have something bad happen to him when he plays against Villa, and Saturday was no different. But he sniffed out the goal, Ollie Watkins. Nice little finish. We'll be disappointed he didn't score a couple more, knowing what he's like as well, because he did have some chances in the game. But generally, just his all-round game, he just keeps getting better and better, and he is now one of the deadliest strikers in the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, I really like him. You know, I've said from the very start of the season, I like what he's about. I like the way he plays. I love his style. I love his down-to-earth ways as well. You know, he's just so measured, and he just always wants to become better. He never takes anything for granted. It's not like he's risen through the leagues and now he's at one of the biggest clubs in the Premier League. And you'd never know he speaks the same as it when he was at Exeter. You know, he's such a great character. But yeah, it was his hard work again that made that goal. He got it himself, as you say. And that's what Smith loves about him. That's the reason why he's played every single minute. Because for the 90 minutes of every game, he hassles and harasses the defenders. And he's now, what, got 13 goals, is it, I think? I think it might be 15 with the England goal and the cup goal, but it would have been a big moment for him in that game, because he's up against Dominic Calvert-Lewin. The both of them scored, but I thought Watkins played, you know, the better out of the two. Obviously, Southgate was there in the stands watching, and what you're noticing now is that Southgate, he's coming to a lot of Villa games, and yeah, he's looking at Tyrone Mings. I suppose, you know, Ross Barkley's not going to make the squad, but he'll be interested to see how he's getting on. But I think he really likes Ollie Watkins, and he's one of those players that are in the forefront of his mind for those final Euros places. And the way he's playing and the way he continues to score goals, it now wouldn't surprise me if he gets into that squad.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, because the squads have gone up to 26 men now, he stands a real chance, doesn't he? Because I don't think the extra striker would have gone with 23 men, but now he's gone up to 26, you'd think an extra striker is going to be in the squad.
There's a couple of players that you look at there, isn't there, that for those extra spots that really, you know, come right back into it. I suppose your Jesse Lingard, your Ollie Watkins, possibly another right back now, they might be able to put three of them in there, whereas previously they only wanted two. It's really interesting, but, you know, for somebody, we've both watched every Villa game, haven't we? So we know how good Ollie Watkins is. And I think Southgate likes his style, and I think that he believes he can fit into that England squad quite well. And potentially, you know, be an asset to them if they need it.
Yeah, just on the England theme, whilst we've got it there, one of the questions from one of our listeners, Holly Jen, she's asked, do you think Jack will play for us again this season? I personally think it would be fair to Jack to rest him ready for the Euros, or am I living in fairyland? Now, just before you interject, Jen, Greg, new name for you this week, just before you interject, Greg, I think he actually needs to play some games to get himself in the Euro squad. But again, I think the 26-man thing now really helps him, considering he hasn't played football for a third of the season.
Another one of those players is probably Maddison, isn't it? You know, he comes right back into the thinking now.
I still don't think he gets in.
Do you not think?
I don't think he gets anywhere near it, to be honest. I just think there's so many good attacking players. I think Maddison hasn't played for England for a long time now.
Yeah, we were just thinking with the extra players, you know. Yeah. There's going to be players that will go there that probably... that aren't going to play a minute. And I think that's why Gareth Southgate was a little bit frustrated. He doesn't necessarily want those extra players because I presume he'll know that two or three of them will just go and won't play a single minute. And it's quite hard to keep those motivated. Mm. But look, those guys are going to know, aren't they, that they're sort of there because the extra men have been added. But I think Jack needs games. I think he needs a couple of games because he's a player that gets better with a bit of rhythm. You know, I've interviewed him a fair few times now, and he always says either when he's coming back from an injury or when he's coming into the start of a new season, he likes to have a couple of games because he feels that his actual best form is then four or five games in. So, I mean, ideally for him, if he could get probably the last three games of the Villa season, that would work well. Then he gets the two warm-up games before the Euros and then bang straight into the Croatia game, is it? Czech Republic? Czech Republic first, yeah.
I don't know, I'm just nodding along with you because I don't know.
It's Czech Republic, I think. But yeah, well, I'll be very drunk on that day wherever I am, so I probably won't even look at the opponents. But yeah, he'll want to play, he'll want to be in a good moment, and he'll need games for me, I think. He's not going to rush back and risk getting injured again. But yeah, you know, let's see. I think he's going to need a couple of games.
He wants it so bad as well, doesn't he? It's all he ever talks about. He just wants to play for England in a major tournament. And kind of, I mean, I think he's already announced himself on the world stage, to be perfectly honest with you. But in a tournament, if he can go and have a massive tournament, that's something he really, really wants to do.
Yeah, totally. You know, every interview he does, he talks about that, doesn't he? And you know, we know he's desperate for it. And I think he'd be quite quietly confident if he's fit. Touch wood that he's fit and available, that he's got a really good chance of starting and actually helping England potentially progress very far and maybe even go on and win the competition. I mean, I think they're the bookies' favourites, which obviously means nothing. But, you know, you're starting to get quite excited about this England team. I think defensively they might have a couple of issues. I don't think they're going to be a team that can dominate possession against the real better teams. I just don't think England are quite at that level yet. But they've got some really exciting players, obviously with Harry Kane, Phil Foden, Jack Grealish himself, potentially even Jude Bellingham, you know, if Rice isn't available or if Southgate feels he can push him forward. But it's exciting time to be an England fan, and I'm certainly looking forward to the Euros as well.
Yeah, and it was an exciting time to be a Villa fan in 1995 in the whole end. I can tell you, Greg, August 1995, the last time Aston Villa beat Manchester United at Villa Park. That stat absolutely makes my head explode. I can still picture being sat in my seat in that game and what a great day it was. I mean, Alan Hansen said you win nothing with kids after that game, and then Man U promptly went on and won the league in the May of that season. That record is it's quite scary, to be honest.
Ridiculous, really, when you think of it. I mean, look, Man United are an elite team with elite players. They've spent ridiculous amounts of money year after year. So it's not like Villa are struggling to beat a Burnley or a Sheffield United or a West Brom. You know, it is Man United. So there's a slight understanding there that they've struggled to beat, struggled to get results against them. But I mean, you know, what's that? How many years is that? Damn, 95.
Two men. I was 10 and I'm 35
now. 16 years, isn't it? No, is it? Oh, sorry, it's even more, isn't it? 25, 26 years.
It's crazy.
Yeah, my math's shocking there. But 26 years, I mean, that they haven't beat them at home and they've played them almost every season. So, I had a look at some of the stats yesterday and Man United have won 100 times in all competitions against Villa, and Villa have only won 49. Now, even those, even those figures seem quite, incorrect, don't they? Because it just feels like Villa never, ever beat Man United. But look, it's a time, it's got to change, hasn't it? Records are there to be broken. And I think that sooner or later, Villa will just win one of these games. And yeah, you know, I think you might be right about the Europa League potentially giving them a bit of, you know, difficulties. I don't know whether they'll play a full team. Will they need to play a full team?
6-2 up, aren't they?
Yeah.
But it's the travel aspect, isn't it? And getting back playing on a Thursday and a Sunday does give Villa an advantage that perhaps they haven't always had against Man U. But to me, I really want us to win, obviously, because I want Villa to win every game. But this has scarred me for a number of years, the fact that we can't beat Manchester United at Villa Park. And I kind of want to be there when it happens to put the ghosts down. And I'm obviously not going to be there on Sunday. But it's just an incredible record. It haunts me. I can think of so many times when Villa have been in good positions at home against Man U and that they've chucked it away. Even in, like, I remember us being 2-0 up in a cup game, chucking it away. I think, I think it was Nistelrooy came on, scored a hat-trick, or Solskjaer came on. Something happened and they went and won the game 3-2. There's been countless games. Alpay scoring an own goal in the last minute. When
Makeda got a few, didn't he, as well? A couple of times with Makeda.
Makeda? I don't think he ever played against anyone else. Just wheeled him out against Villa. That was all that happened. We must have been the only team he ever scored against. I was at that Old Trafford game when he curled in that wonder strike. Yeah. And then the next season, Villa were 2-0 up at Villa Park under Gerard Houllier. I remember you speaking to him about that game. Makeda came on and scored in that game as well. And then you don't ever see the guy again. No, unbelievable.
No, ridiculous. So Alex Ferguson said to Houllier at halftime, you know, you should be winning 6-0. That's like the most complete performance I've seen against one of my teams. Villa were very unlucky that day to throw it away. But as you say, it just goes with the theme, doesn't it, of just struggling to beat them.
Yeah, we were doing all right last season as well until Fernandez trod on Conser's foot and got a penalty. I honestly don't think we're ever going to beat Man U at Villa Park. I just think it's impossible for us. It's like some kind of curse. I just don't see it ever happening. But to be fair to Man U, they've surprised me a little bit this season. They've been very good, haven't they? I know they're nowhere near City, really. But Solskjaer, I think, does actually have them heading in the right direction.
I think so, yeah. I think they've made progress. I always feel it's hard to say that Man United have had a good season by finishing second just because of growing up with them being so dominant. And you know, they're such a massive club. I think they're still the biggest supported club in the world, aren't they? So, that's a sign of just how huge that football club is. And finishing second, and even if they do go in and win the Europa League final, yeah, it's progress having experienced recent seasons, but it's not where Manchester United really want to be at, is it? They're second-rate positions. You've got to say fair play to Solskjaer because they were in a bit of a sticky place before him and he's come and he's done it in the right way, I feel. I feel that he's quite engaging, isn't he, in the fact that he can relate to the supporters because he's obviously, played for the club and Man United have brought back some, you know, big characters of the past, Michael Carrick and Darren Fletcher. Fletcher's obviously there now, yeah. And, I think there's a lot going on at Manchester United, obviously, with the Glazers and the Super League issues, but they're starting to do things right and trying to bring the fans back on side a little bit. But on the pitch, they've been very good this season and quite enjoyable to watch. Think that, you know, that those forward four or five players are very exciting, aren't they?
And now, after a couple of decent displays for Villa, it's a good game to kind of see where we're at again, playing a team like Manchester United, isn't it?
Yeah, it'll be a big test for Villa, and I actually think Dean Smith will be quite excited for this game because they're on the back of the Everton game, a really good result and a really good performance. I think they'll quite fancy their chances going against one of the bigger boys in the division, and
no pressure.
Yeah, exactly. You know, if they were coming up against a Sheffield United or a West Brom, then the pressure is on them to go and win because they're the favourites. And if they don't, you see the kind of backlash that follows because, you know, Villa got 1 point out of those against those two teams in since the turn of the year. And you saw how frustrating it was for the fans after. But I still believe that there's a good performance in there for Villa left and that they're going to beat one of these bigger teams. I was saying this at the back end of last year and they left it really, really late until they beat Arsenal, didn't they?
They left it to the last possible moment.
Yeah, but, you know, they went and did it. So I think they'll do it. I think they'll beat one of the big teams again. Whether it's Man United at the weekend, I don't know, but I think they'll do it.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Very kind of you to include Arsenal in the big teams there, to be honest, Greg. Let's move on to the top three then this week. And I've got my answers down here. Not 100% sure that I've got the brief 100% right, so it's going to be difficult for me to explain to the listeners, which doesn't make for a good podcast. But we've gone with top three Premier League rivals. I think you're involved this week as well, aren't you, Greg? So the three teams that we think Villa have competed with in the Premier League era. Your face tells me that you've prepared absolutely nothing for this, and it's going to be my three.
So, I mean, I think we were trying to gauge where Villa are in terms of comparing them with other clubs in the division, I think, yeah.
So, okay.
Premier League era is a big, you know, there's a lot of years to compete. There's a lot of years to pull together, isn't there? If we're looking at Villa now compared to Villa in 1995, then it's a big difference, isn't it? But I think if we pull together all the Premier League years, where would Villa be in the table sort of thing, and what clubs do they compare to?
So I'm going to pick my three that I think Villa have been on the same kind of level at in the Premier League era, Greg. So the first one I've gone for is Spurs. I think Villa and Spurs are both... Villa have won two trophies, actually, in the Premier League era. I think Spurs have only won one, but I think Spurs have probably had the better finishes in recent years. But when I was growing up, Villa used to finish ahead of Spurs. Now, I class Spurs as probably being an elite side now with their facilities and everything that they've got going on, some of the players that they have. But in the Premier League era, I think Villa and Spurs have probably not been far off each other, although Spurs have never been relegated. Yeah, that's fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair because if you look back to when Martin O'Neill was leaving, Villa were on the same level as like Man City and Tottenham at that point. Okay, Man City were just starting to break the wage, you know, structure ridiculously and buy big players, but that's where Villa were, weren't they? Sixth, seventh place type thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Second one I've gone for is probably the obvious one. Two. Everton. I always feel Villa and Everton are similar sized clubs on a similar level. We've probably both done similar things over the Premier League here. Again, I think Everton have won one trophy. They won the FA Cup in 95. So, no, I mean, neither club have been winning lots in my lifetime. But again, Villa and Everton and O'Neill, they always seem to be competing in and around the top six. I think they're classic Premier League sides, both of them. So I think Villa and Everton have probably been about par through the Premier League. Again, though, obviously those three seasons Villa spent in the Championship probably edges Everton a little bit ahead.
Yeah, I agree with that. I always put sort of Villa in the Everton bracket. When they were in the Premier League. I think Everton had a good spell, didn't they, under David Moyes, and they got fifth a couple of times. They got fourth 1 year, or was it? No.
Yeah, they did.
And obviously, they almost got into the Champions League, but lost out. And they've had a little bit of European football. So yeah, I always think Villa are on that level, same sort of level as Everton.
Third one, tough. I struggled for a third, if I'm being perfectly honest. At one point, I had Arsenal down, but Arsenal have won the Premier League four times, so I don't think I can put Villa down. Nah. One. I went for Leicester. Leicester are a big, big club now. They're really well-operated, well-run club. I know they've won the Premier League, but they've spent some time out of the league. They've been in League One for a little bit. The last maybe 3 or 4 years, they've consistently been in and around the top six or seven. That has been Villa at a lot of points in my childhood growing up. So I went for Leicester, but obviously they've got the big one in that they've won the Premier League.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it, that third
one? I want to say West Ham, because I think Villa have been better than West Ham in the Premier League era. They're having a good season now. I couldn't really have Arsenal or any of the big boys in the big six. It was difficult.
It's a tough one, that. I think.
No, not Newcastle, producer. Not Newcastle.
I think
never
won
anything.
When you look at Liverpool, Leicester. I think when you average out the title win and then the spell in League One and Championship
relegations
and the couple of relegations, and look, there was a time in the 90s, wasn't the early 2000s, when they were getting to cup finals and stuff, and
they won the cup,
and they weren't a bad side then, so they're not too far off it. I think that's with what you had available, I think that's a good third.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, it was difficult, very, very difficult. So we'll go to you now to say, who are Villa aiming to get towards now in the next 12 months? I mean, probably Leicester, to be fair.
I still don't think Villa are...
Isn't they miles ahead of us?
No, again, I don't, to qualify that as well. I think that Leicester are ahead of Villa, obviously, because of the league position, the fact that they're in a cup final. I think that, and they've had a couple of seasons in European football. So they are ahead of Villa. I think they've got a better squad than Villa at the moment. Probably a better manager as well. I really like Brendan Rodgers. I think he's an exceptional manager. But I don't think that Villa are quite aiming to be Look, the ambition is to be where Leicester are. Don't get me wrong. But for me, next season, if they don't eclipse what Leicester does, what Leicester do, then it's still not something to get concerned about. I think now, looking at the league position, Villa have to be better than West Ham next season. I think they have to be better than Everton next season. And I think they have to finally say that they are a bigger club than Arsenal next season as well. Yeah, Arsenal are a huge global brand, obviously, because and they can pull in ridiculous commercial deals because of the size of the club, the history, the huge stadium that they've got, and the fact that they've been able to attract very good quality players still. And I still think if you've got a player choosing between Arsenal or Villa, they still go to Arsenal at this time. So Villa's challenge is to finally say that they're bigger than Arsenal. And that's a really tough challenge in itself because Arsenal are trying to get back to where they previously were. So yeah, for me, those are the three.
I don't think that's that tough, you know. Getting to Arsenal's level, I got to be careful because I was on BBC a few weeks ago and I pretty much spent the whole hour ripping into Arsenal, and then I was getting a bit of stick from Arsenal fans on social media. But you know, I think they're finished.
I mean, look, you know, like,
I really think they're finished.
I don't disagree with you there. I think they're in a real tough moment, and you know, is Arteta the right man? Are they going to be able to get real quality players in through the door again? They need to win the Europa League. They need to win it. Otherwise, it's an unbelievably poor season. But they might just be able to still turn the corner and get back to where they once were. Don't think they can ever really get back. I don't think we can say that they can get back to the stage where they previously were for a good few years. They're a long way off that. But football turns around very quickly. You know, Liverpool had their problems and were able to turn things around. The story of Leicester's great, so it can be done.
Yeah, maybe if Spotify take over Arsenal, they might be able to head in a different direction. And staying with that theme, we've got a few questions. I don't know whether you... Do you watch Line of Duty, Greg? I've never spoke to you about it before.
No, I don't watch Line of Duty. I suppose I should, but no, I don't.
Don't sound too enthusiastic about it. There was a few Villa Easter eggs in Line of Duty on Sunday. I don't know whether you heard, actually. Someone I know reasonably well, Nigel Boyle, played a big part in the Line of Duty finale. Big Villa fan, Nigel. I think he listens to the podcast, actually, so we'll say hello to him. So Tim Griff, 88, has asked, with the Line of Duty finale in mind and Prince William yesterday opening Villa's new high performance centre, which we haven't even spoke about, Greg, which is an absolute disgrace, who would be in your famous Villa supporter five-a-side team? Can we get five?
Well, Prince William's got to be
there. Prince William, Tom Hanks, straight in there.
William and Tom Hanks. David Cameron claimed he was a Villa fan for a little bit, didn't he?
No, I'm not having that. I don't believe it.
Goodness, man. There aren't many other famous Villa fans, are there?
I mean, I always think Ian Taylor, but that doesn't really count because he played for them.
Geezer Butler. Who's that?
Get Geezer Butler in goal. Who's Geezer Butler? The Black Sabbath.
Should I know?
Come on, Greg. You're doing a Villa podcast there.
Terrible.
You need to acknowledge that's three. We've got one of the Weasley twins. I've forgotten his real name. One of the Weasley twins from Harry Potter.
Nigel Kennedy. We'll get him in
Nigel
there.
Nigel Kennedy. David Bradley as well. Really famous actor. He's a Villa fan.
David Bradley would have to make it. I mean, this is going to be a really struggling five-a-side team, let's be honest.
Yeah, we might have to do some walking football.
Not going to get many goals.
No, walking football it is. I think Prince William could lead the line, though. He's a big lad, isn't he? You get a few crosses in, Prince William will get on the end of them.
Yeah, big lad. He's into his football as well. He used to play in his Villa kit on Christmas Day every year with the royal family and the royal lot. So
you never know him. I mean, he's a massive Villa geek, to be fair. He might listen to the podcast as well. He'll be pleased to be in our five-a-side team. Before we go to the last question, the producer's just sent me through the all-time Premier League table, Greg.
Okay.
You haven't looked at it, have you?
I haven't,
No, right. Where do you think Villa sit in the all-time Premier League title? I'm quite upset by something I've seen here that he's laughing about, to be honest.
That means Newcastle are ahead of them. Yeah. I mean, I remember looking at this before Villa were relegated and they were quite high up. I think they were fourth or fifth, but I reckon Villa are maybe eighth now.
Ninth, right, yeah.
Yeah,
ninth with 1,360
points. Who are the three directly above?
Newcastle have snuck above.
Yeah.
In eighth. Yeah, with 1,352. I'm surprised at that. They're eighth. They've actually played less games in the Premier League than Villa as well, according to this table. It's an old table. This can't be right. Everton, seventh. Man City, sixth. Tottenham, fifth. Liverpool, fourth. Chelsea, third. Arsenal, who I've just slated, second. Mm. And then Manchester United, first. West Ham are a little bit below Villa, having played about 40 less games. Even Blackburn are still sitting in 12th ahead of Leeds in 13th. Mm. Blackburn haven't been in the Premier League for ages. So, yeah, producer one, Daniel Neal, because, I laughed when he said Villa and Newcastle are on the same level. But actually, according to this table, there's not much in it at all. We'll finish with you-know-who's question, Greg. Jack Miller gets a question in every week. Fair play to him. I try and avoid him, but you just can't, because I like his question. They're always interesting. So let's go with it. He said, if we were hosting a Villa chat show, our own Parkinson, if you will, who would our three Villa guests be to spend the hour with, and who would the musical act be?
You know, I seen this question last night and I liked it. I liked the question and I haven't even thought of it. I'm really frustrated. Can you answer first and give me a little time to think?
I'll give a couple that I'd have. So you'd have to have one current day player, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I'd pick Mings because I think he'd be the best to talk to. I'd like to interview Tyrone Mings. I really like him as a person.
Yeah. Every time I've spoken to Tyrone Mings, I've enjoyed the conversation. I think I'd still pick McGinn just because I've interviewed him again as well a few times and he, you know, top lad. But I think you'd have a little bit more fun with him.
I was going to say, in my three, I'm always having Ian Taylor there.
Yeah.
Ian Taylor's at everything that I'm involved in. I would always have Towers there. I was going to go for quite a niche pick of Snoddy for the third one. Because he's so funny. Yeah. Who's funnier, Snoddy or McGinn, do you think?
I don't know Snoddy that very well. I didn't really get to know him, so I can only go by what people say, but everybody says Snoddy is the sort of life and soul of the dressing room. And so I think probably he would be. And that's just going by what people have said. Do you know what, Dav? I would have, can we have an old player?
Yeah.
I want John Carew in there. I think he'd be a really interesting, to have an hour with him would be real good fun. Somebody we've tried to interview, haven't quite got to him yet. But
no, you have to be a multimillionaire.
or Prince William. but yeah, I think
we've got more chance of Prince William, to be honest.
Yeah. I'd really love to spend a bit of time with him and just, you know, a no holes barred conversation and a couple of points. It'd be great fun.
I daren't even ask you about the musical act when you didn't know who Geza Butler is.
Jesus. I don't know, can we have Courtney Hawes?
Yeah, Courtney Hawes, why not? He can come on and do some of his stuff.
We missed him out of the boy band recently. No, so yeah, painful. That was painful, very, very stupid. On our part.
We've redeemed himself, getting him on the big stage as the musical guest in our Villa Church show. He'll be chuffed with that.
But if we're going to have an actual musical act, then I think I've got to have Ariana Grande, just because I love her.
Okay. I was not expecting you to say that at all.
I'm not listening to her music. I just want to look at her for an hour.
I was going to say Neil Diamond, just so I can sing Sweet Caroline with the Villa players. That was what I wanted to do.
So we've got a toss up here between Neil Diamond and Ariana Grande.
It's all about the music, Greg. That was the question. That was the brief. Jack didn't ask you who do you want to stand and look at for an hour. He asked you what musical guest you want for music. I'm just answering the question, mate. That's all I'm doing. I think that's a good way to end it. So thanks to you, Greg, for coming on and chatting to me. As always, take it you're not going to Old Trafford. It's not at Villa Park, so you will be going to Villa Park on Sunday. I'm fed up with these fixtures. I get it wrong all the time about where the games are as well. We need a bit of normality. So you're going to Villa Park on Sunday?
Yeah, I'll be there, mate.
Lucky you. I hope you enjoy it, and then hopefully we can come back and talk about that hoodoo being broken next week. Thanks ever so much for all your questions, and thanks for listening as well. We'll be back next week to review the Manchester United game. Up the Villa.
The Athletic.